You are listening to the Point Harbor Church podcast. Experience a place where you can grow in your faith, connect with others, and discover the story God has for your life. For more resources, visit us online at pointharbor.com.
Hi, I'm Pastor Tom. If you've been attending here since October, you may not know who I am. Many of you know some of my story, but others you may not. So let me briefly catch up to speed. Last September, I was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma. Say that name three times fast, and it took me a while just to learn how to say it. It's an aggressive, relatively rare bile duct cancer. I went to Johns Hopkins for Whipple surgery on October 23rd, and I spent 29 days, they lied to me, they said it'd be about 6 days, it was 29 days in the hospital. I'm still in recovery, but I'm getting stronger every day. Please pray for me. This is my first time preaching. Well, last night was my first time preaching since I was diagnosed. Well, actually, that's not true. I preached one time on the Eastern Shore before I went in for surgery. Had an opportunity to share the gospel then. I didn't expect this, and it challenged my faith and my understanding of scriptures. You know, I had taken my health for granted. I've always been a very healthy person. I never get sick. You can talk to the staff people. John always called me ground zero, which I'm not sure why. When everybody gets sick, he'd call me ground zero. I was the only one that didn't get sick. Everybody else got it, but I didn't. But somehow he thinks I'm the one that gave it to everybody. So I kind of took that for granted, my health for granted. And reality was I was in better shape than I had been in a long time. I had lost weight. I was down to about 215 pounds. At one point, I was up to about 260 pounds. So I was down to about 215 pounds. And I was swimming about 2,000 meters every other day and doing weights and just trying to take care of myself. When this came into my life, when I found out I had cancer, the scripture in James, count it all joy when you fall into or when you meet various trials and tribulations, the song Count Your Blessings came to my mind. You familiar with that song? It's an older song. Count your blessings, name them one by one. And I thinking about the blessings, and I've been blessed. My life has been blessed, but I'm thinking, I'm not sure I want to put this in the blessing category. Cancer is not something I wanted or looked forward to. And so I had to kind of wrestle with that. But it also gave me a chance to really take count of my life and how blessed I really have been, how God has protected me. The reality is I've lived a blessed life. And yes, I've had difficulties. I've had some financial challenges. I've had teenagers. If you've had teenagers, you know what I mean. But God had always seen us through. And by nature, I'm not really a worrier. So this really caught me off guard. And I want to share this message with you because I know some of you have met a trial and you're trying to remain steadfast. And I've learned firsthand how difficult that can be. In our text, it says that these trials produce steadfastness. Now, what does that mean? It means you cannot will it. You can't say, I'm just going to determine. It has to be something that God gives you to keep your faith strong in the midst of that trial and to keep yourself trusting in God. So this message is a message of praise of how God has sustained me and what he is doing in my life. But it is also a confession of where I have fallen short. Because, you know, it's easy. I've preached this passage before, but I've never gone through a trial like I've been through in the last several months. And now I've got real experience in difficult times. I've had trials. I've had difficulties, but nothing like this. And I'm not sharing this for sympathy, and I'm not saying I've suffered more than some of you. I'm sure some of you have suffered far more than I have. And I am blessed beyond measure. But in the very beginning, God impressed upon me that I needed to share this story. that this sickness is for his glory, whether or whether not I live. There are no guarantees in life, and God has numbered my days already. And there's nothing I'm going to do to change that. I know there are others who are going through trials, and I think of Larry Spencer and all the trials he's been through, and I'm going to talk about him in a little bit. And I know I'm not the only one that's faced cancer. But let's turn in our Bibles to James chapter 1, starting in verse 2. In your blue Bible there in the seat back in front of you, it's on page 1113. If you don't have a Bible, you're welcome to take that Bible home with you as a gift from us. So it says in James chapter 1, starting in verse 2, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. Because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. I think the statement, when you meet trials, is interesting. In the NIV, it says face. In the NLT, it says comes your way. And in the New King James, it says fall into. But the idea that is conveyed here is that you're on a journey. You're just living your life, going about doing the things that you normally do. And you happen upon this trial. It just kind of comes into your life. You didn't go out of the way for it. You didn't strive for it. It just comes into your life. It's kind of like, hello, trial. It's nice to meet you. Welcome to my life. Now, the text says when you meet trials of various kinds. Well, this could be a trial of persecution. There are people all around this world that are facing persecution. Some are being killed. Some are being put in prison. Their families are being separated. They, just because of their faith in Jesus Christ, their life is in danger. They're going through a very specific type of trial. Some of you may be financial. You may be going through some financial hardships, not of your own doing, but it could be a job situation or some other type of thing that's happened to you. Some are going through trials in relationship, maybe your marriage, maybe a son or a daughter or a father and mother, and you're having difficulty and they're fighting you and it's just ugly and difficult. And some of you may be facing health trials, as I did. And as I said, it conveys the idea that the trials come your way as you are living your life. As in, I meet a new person who comes into your life. When I was in the hospital, we met a nurse named Miriam. Very, very sweet lady. She came in and she had such a great attitude. And we started talking and just getting to know her a little bit. And she had a very unique accent. And I'm trying to figure out where, you know, because it wasn't all put together. She was a black lady, but it wasn't a African accent. And it wasn't English or American. And I'm like, and then I started talking to her. She was French. And her father was an ambassador and came over here to the United States. And so she ended up living here in the United States, got her nursing degree. And she was so sweet. But she noticed we had Liberty hats on, or my son had a Liberty University hat. And she says, my son plays football for Liberty University. And she was a believer. And so it was very nice to meet Miriam. And whenever she would come in, she always worked the night shift. Whenever she would come in, just a smile would come on her face. It was such a joy. She was a fellow believer, and she had this great attitude. It was very nice to meet Miriam. So that was a pleasure. But some things, like trials, come into our life that isn't always so pleasurable to meet. So the idea is you're living your life and an unexpected calamity comes into your life. Now, this is not to be confused with consequence. When we make bad decisions, calamity often follows, right? And I've seen people, they're, oh, I'm going through a trial. No, you were just stupid and you made a bad decision. These trials just kind of meet us on the way. We didn't go out of our way to get that. So let me get back to my story. I'm going to spend a little bit of time, and I don't normally do this, so it's a little bit awkward for me, but I'm just going to tell you a little bit of my story, and it's going to take a while, but just to get you up to speed and understand. Again, I'm not saying I've had the worst trials that anybody's ever had, but you know, when they're in the midst of the trial, you don't care about other people. You just care about what you're going through. The week before Labor Day last year, our family tradition for the past 17 years is to rent a house in Frisco, North Carolina, where our family meets and spends time together. Now, I have 5 children and 17 grandchildren. So when they all get together, it's a multitude. It's quite a few people. And so we always look forward to that, and it's always a blessed time. And so, but coming up to that, I've been just feeling very tired. I mean, really tired. By noon, I was like, I was spent. And then on Thursday before Labor Day weekend, I kind of felt like I had a little fever, just a little grade fever. And so I told the ladies, I said, I'm going to head home. I don't feel that well. And I didn't want to be sick during Labor Day week, during our vacation. And so I went home and I rested. And the next day, the fever was gone. And so I got up and I just started doing things. My wife said, you need to go to the doctor. You need to go to urgent care. And I'm like, what do you go to urgent care and say? I just don't feel right. Yeah, I didn't have any symptom there. I just don't feel right. And I'd been not feeling right for a little bit of time there. But we went on our trip, and the next day I had another low-grade fever and my stomach issues, nausea. Sunday, and just the rest of the week, I had good days and bad days. I didn't have any more fevers after that, but just some days I was really nauseous. My appetite wasn't there. And so when we got back from our vacation, I got an appointment with a physician, but I got on the scale. Thank you. I got on the scale, and I was shocked at how much weight I had lost just in 1 week. And I went to see the doctor, and she did a bunch of tests, and my liver enzymes were all out of whack. And I'd just been there in May, and everything was perfect. So just in that time. From that point on until I got diagnosed later in September, I was losing about a pound a day. I was at 215. I finally ended up at 165 pounds. I'm back up to 190 now. So gaining my weight back. So we started doing all these different tests, adjusting my meds, trying to figure out what in the world was going on. And finally, my doctor said, well, we need to schedule you for a CT scan. Well, that was scheduled for the following Wednesday, and I made a trip with Jose down to Columbia to go see Larry. And we went down there. That flight, and I traveled pretty well. I mean, Jose, we were pretty experienced. We moved pretty quick through the airport and everything else. But you might could testify, man, I was miserable on that flight, just feeling terrible. And then we finally got into my hotel room at 8 p.m. and I just crashed on the bed and I was exhausted, just absolutely exhausted. I got up the next day and felt better. We did the day, met with people and was doing, and then we went out to eat that night. And while I was there, just terrible again. Stomach pains, nausea. The next day, Sunday, did pretty well. Then we had to travel back on Monday, got back at midnight. Again, just exhausted. It was actually a pretty good day, but just exhausted. And then we had meetings the next day. So I went in, met John and Dan for our executive meeting. And I walked in and Dan says, you're all yellow. And John says, yeah, you are. And so we had that meeting, and I'm like, well, I got a CT scan tomorrow. Maybe we'll figure out what's going on. So then I got to staff meeting, and sitting there next to Nancy, and all these people start texting Nancy saying, Tom looks yellow. What's wrong with him? And so by this time, I'm like, okay, I got to get to the ER room. Something's seriously wrong. I'd known for a little while something was seriously wrong, but didn't have any idea what it was. I thought maybe my meds, because I was on a lot of meds. I was a type 2 diabetic, and I thought maybe something was hurting my kidneys or my liver. But anyways, so I went to the ER, and I called Dr. Keynes. He attends our church, and Michelle, she's also a doctor, his wife, and said, do you know a good GI doctor? Because I got some issues here. And so they got me connected. I went in. I went to the ER, and all I know is I went to get a CT. They did a bunch of other tests. They sent me to get the CT. And the CT, you know how they can't tell you? The technician can't tell you anything? The only thing the CT technician said to me is, it's really good you came in today. That's always encouraging to hear. So I got admitted to Obese Hospital, met Dr. Malik. He's really good. He said, we're going to do a scope. Well, they did me CT scans, MRI, and all those types of things. And then he said, we're going to go in and we're going to do a scope all the way down to your small intestine. And so they put the scope down there. And while they're there, they saw the tumor. They put a little bypass around that tumor, because what was happening is my bile duct, where it goes into the small intestine, was blocked, so that none of my enzymes that my pancreas would produce to help me digest my food could get to my small intestine. So basically, all the food I was eating would pass without being digested. And it was, so I was getting no nutrition. I was living off of my body, my fat and my muscle. And by the time I was done, I looked like skin and bones. I had no muscle left. And anyway, so the doctor came out of that and he said, you've got cancer. You've got cholangiocarcinoma. And I can't in the church say, he said, you are facing a big surgery. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like fun. So that Thursday was when I had that procedure done. They sent me home. And I got home and I was exhausted. All my kids had come. They just dropped what they were doing, took off their jobs, and they came and they spent time with me in the hospital. And so at this point, I finally went home, and then they went back to their houses. And I went to sleep because I was exhausted. And I slept till about 2 in the morning. And I got up at 2, between 2 and 3, and I couldn't sleep. My son was driving back to Lynchburg at the time, because he had left that evening, and he was driving back to Lynchburg. You know how we all decide we're going to become doctors through Mr. Google? I had not really done any research on the cancer I had, so then I went to my little handy-dandy thing in my hand there, my phone, and I looked up cholangiocarcinoma, and I was shocked. It said I had a 20 to 25% chance to live another 5 years. 20 to 25%. Survival rate at 5 years. And then, you know, you flip through Facebook and do all the different things, and I see a quote from Vadi Bachman, a great theologian, if you ever listened to him. And he says this: sometimes God is glorified when sick saints get well, but more often than not, God is glorified when sick saints die well. Vadi Bachman died that day. Now, hear me. I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to go to heaven. But my family, my friends, my grandchildren, some of them are sitting right here. And I started thinking about them, and I started to weep. To think that I may not be able to see them grow up and have their own families. I wept. And I'm not a crier, guys. If you know me well, you know I'm not. But I cried and I wept for a while. And then when I was done with my pity party, I started asking, what is God doing? What do I need to do here? In the morning, this is now Friday morning, I texted Pastor John and Pastor Dan, and I asked them, hey, can you meet me for lunch today? Now, we don't try not to do things on our day off. And so they both said, sure, because they knew something was going on. Of course, they knew I'd been in the hospital. They showed up at, we just walked across the street to Chili's, sat down. I told John, well, John, I think I've messed up your 10-year plan. Because, you know, John's always talking about 10 years. I said, I think I've messed up your 10 years. And I just said, hey, I've got cancer. And the statistics say I probably won't make it for 5 more years. And we sat in there and we talked and we cried. Or as Pastor Dan said, a dust storm came in. And we got dust in our eyes. And then John wanted to bring me up before the church. I didn't want to do that. But I realized I needed to. I needed prayer. But I told him, I was trying to downplay it. I told him, just tell people it might be cancer because, you know, the pathology report hadn't come back yet. Even though the doctor had said, it's cancer. I've seen enough of it. It's cancer. But I wanted to downplay it. So Saturday night, did the service, and then God convicted me. He said, if I'm going to heal you, don't steal my glory. Because people needed to see it. If I get healed of this cancer, they needed to see it. I didn't really want to know anyone to know how serious it was. I hadn't even told my wife. I had done the deep dive. She hadn't. And so she had no idea how aggressive, how bad this cancer can be. The next morning, I told John to be more specific, though I still didn't mention the type of cancer. If you were there that morning, you heard me say, I believe in the verse, all things work together for good. And I do. I absolutely believe that. And I said to you all, I know God has got this. But what I meant by that, and what I've had numerous people come up and say, God's got this. And what they're saying is, God's going to heal you. I've been a pastor too long. I prayed for a lot of really good people that God did not choose to heal. When I said God got this, what I meant is that God's in control and whatever he does is best. And I know it. We don't always like what God does, but God has a reason and a purpose in it all. I had an appointment the next Wednesday at Johns Hopkins. This is how quick things are moving here. Less than a week, and I have this appointment with Dr. He, who's done hundreds, maybe 1,000 of these surgeries. We prayed, and I asked the church to pray for 3 things. I asked the church to pray that the cancer would be stage 1, the surgeon would get all the cancer, and that the surgery would happen quickly. And I believe God answered all 3 of those prayers. My surgery was scheduled for October 28th, just short of a month away, which I would have preferred it to be a little sooner. I wanted to get it over with, but I was happy with that. A few days later, they called me up and said, hey, could you do your surgery on October 23rd? I said, yes, I can. My daughter had already scheduled her flight from Colorado to be here, but she'll figure it out. God had come through again, taking another almost week off. In the meantime, Nancy's father was sick and required round-the-clock care, and the family was providing. So Nancy was pulled in 2 different directions. So here's a new trial. So the first one is, hello, cancer, welcome to my life. Now I'm going to call this one, hello, mortality, because he was in his last weeks of life, last month of life. Welcome to my life again, another trial that we're facing. Nancy's dad, Papa, had been a huge part of our life, and Nancy was very close to him. She had been going and staying with him because he needed round-the-clock care. Now Nancy felt very conflicted. She wanted to be with me, and she wanted to be with her dad. For the next month, Nancy was driving back and forth, whether it was from here to the farm, about 1.5 hours, or from Johns Hopkins down to the farm, which was a 3-hour drive, back and forth, all the time anxious that something was going to happen to the person, to one of the people that she loved while she was away with the other one. I told her, God must think you've got pretty broad shoulders because he has put so much on you. We got to Johns Hopkins on October 23rd in the morning. Surgery went perfect. In fact, later on, the surgeon said it was textbook. In fact, the funny thing is, he said the guy after you was end up being like 13 hours, all kinds of complications. He went home in like 5 days. So mine was a textbook surgery, but not so good in the recovery. I woke up in the ICU in pain, but honestly, it wasn't that bad because, of course, I had the magic button. Every 20 minutes, the magic button. I love my magic button. It made things tolerable, manageable. But I noticed that I had this pain in my back. And then when I could no longer, they took that little magic button away and just started me on IV stuff. Man, the pain got so bad. It felt like a knife in my back. I guess 8-9 hours on the table, that hard table had done my back in. And I was in pain. I wasn't getting any sleep. Hello, pain. Welcome to my life. Another trial that I'm going through. Day after day in extreme pain. Then we figured out that my inflatable bed wasn't inflating. So we exchanged beds. That lasted a day before that one broke. I think I went through 3 or 4 beds, and I finally got a bed, which they said was a special needs bed. My daughter said it's because I'm special. But now my back was shot. I moved from the bed to a recliner to a chair because I couldn't sit or stay in any place for more than about 20 minutes before my pain was so high that I had to move. And by the way, whoever invented furniture for a hospital should be shot. If you've ever been in a hospital, there are no comfortable recliners. There are no comfortable chairs, period, anywhere in a hospital. It got to be where I was, they would give me Dilaudid via IV. And when the nurse would come in and give me the Dilaudid, I'd just kind of sink into the bed and I'd get 1 hour sleep. And then I'd wake back up in pain. And I'd have to wait for 3 hours till the next pain medicine. And they would give me IV or Tylenol and stuff, things like that. Didn't touch it. So I'm getting about 3 hours sleep a night, max. And they said they want you to walk, to get your bowels moving. So this is me. I sleep for my hour. I get up, and then I start walking the halls to wait till my next medicine. And then they give me the pain medicine. And it didn't take the pain away, but I didn't care for about an hour. And I go to sleep. As the doctors are trying to get my digestive system going, because I had an NG tube coming out of the surgery. They finally took that out, thank God. They took that out, and they started me on clear, and then liquid diet, but I could have pudding, different things, and then more solid food. And they kept coming in and saying, are you passing any gas? It's just a question you don't ask people, you know? But I got used to it, and they would ask you other questions. I'm like, really? It's very personal. But the answer was always no. And so I'm going, this is now day 5, day 6, and I'm taking in food, but nothing is coming out. And they said, well, you could have an obstruction, but that usually works out. Body just takes care of itself. Hello, bowel obstruction. Welcome to my life. Now I got a new problem. And I won't tell you how I knew we had a problem, but they said, oh, you need to have your NG tube put back in. So they get a nurse to come in there, try to jam this thing up my nose, and she really didn't know what she was doing. There's a bone back there, by the way. And she kept finding that bone perfectly, and that was excruciatingly painful. So she said, well, let me get somebody else. The next nurse came in. And, of course, they're putting the lidocaine on it so it'll numb it. Not a bit. And she does the same thing. I don't know, maybe it's something in my nose, but, man, she kept finding that bone. Couldn't get it. Finally, the third nurse came in, and she was an expert. She knew what she was doing. She got it in there. Relief. Digestive relief, at least. Finally, after several days, I think it was about 4 or 5 days, they said, we're going to take the tube out. Maybe your system has had time to rest and things will get kicked back up together. So they took that back out and we started the whole process again. So realize now I'm into the 2 weeks of being in the hospital. I just want to go home. And I'm having to start this whole 4 or 5 day process. And so I start the liquid diet and then the soft foods, et cetera, and still nothing. Still nothing's happening. And I got the exact same thing. Everything is sitting on my stomach and I don't feel well at all. I mean, I'm feeling really, really, really bad now. And so finally, this is now like week 3 and they're saying, okay, you have an obstruction. They did a scan to see where it was at and they figured out where it was at. And they said, you got an obstruction, so we're gonna probably have to go back into surgery. We're gonna take you into surgery tomorrow. So the next day they said, okay, we're gonna come get you right after lunch, which means nothing to me since when you have an NG tube, you can't have food. So just, I have to wait. And so I'm waiting. And the doctor came in and I'm saying, I need this NG tube back in because I am in pain. I'm in misery. And you know, you have to be bad when you ask for an NG tube. I'm serious. This is not pleasant at all. And I said, he said, well, we're going to put one in when you're in surgery. I can't wait. I told him, I cannot wait. The only thing I ask is you get me somebody that knows what they're doing. And this was Dr. Solomon. He was the resident. And he said, I'll take care of it. I'll do it myself. And he did. And he knew what he was doing. Thank God. And I got that. I'm so glad I insisted because they ended up pushing off my surgery till 1 a.m. So I'd have been all day, and I'm sure I would have vomited and many other things there. But I finally got to that. And I'm telling you all this to confess that I wasn't living out counting all joy. Most days we're good, but some days I was complaining to God. I know how Elijah feels now when he was depressed and complaining, God, just take me. Just take me. I would say most days God was present in the room. We had wonderful nurses and doctors. My brother-in-law is a deacon. We had Bibles. And so we'd given out 20, 30, 40 Bibles. I forget how many it is. I offered a Bible to Dr. Levi Solomon, a Jewish man. He declined, but he was very gracious. And I, of course, said, you know, we won't be offended if you don't take it. He was a really, really good man. I had one young nurse in training ask me, could she pray for me? And I could tell she was struggling to figure out how to use her faith in her new career that she was going into. And it was just a joy that she could express her faith there. There were so many different divine appointments that God gave us. My daughter she had a Colorado shirt on, and she was walking through the halls, and this other couple was there, and they said, oh, you're from Colorado? We have a daughter in Colorado. This was Kevin and Cheryl. He had pancreatic cancer. He had had the Whipple surgery done 3 years before that. So they got talking. Their daughter lived just a few miles from my daughter in Colorado Springs. My daughter just met with them, with their daughter a week ago and prayed with her because her dad is not doing well right now. They ministered to us and we ministered to them. But I have to confess, there were some dark days for me, days I was discouraged and I didn't want to talk with anyone. There were only a few, but they were real. Days where I'm just like, God, I can't take this anymore. I'm in so much pain. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I can't digest food. I'm on insulin now. God, what are you doing? I was discouraged. Now, there were some good days, too. The day Pastor John walked in, I couldn't believe John came from Baltimore to see me. Came to Baltimore. Larry and Stacy Spencer, Ryan and Rob, and Ryan Buck and Rob LaCrosse, they came. After 29 days, I was being released from the hospital. Oh, I skipped something. Sorry. Larry shows up at the hospital. Larry, come on up here. This is what he was wearing. He understood me. He got me. Oh, can you see that? He was rubbing it in. I laughed. I needed a laugh at the time. Unless you've had that surgery or surgery in a stomach where you've been put down, you don't really understand it. You don't get it. So there were some times of joy, but there were some really despondent days. After 29 days, I was finally being released from the hospital. The very hour I was being released, Nancy got the call that her father passed away. Now I'm carrying a new guilt. Because of me, my wife was not able to be with her father before he passed away. And I cried again. What was God trying to teach me? I could go on and talk about infections and dietary and digestive issues, insulin dependence, creon dependence, a total change of life for me. I can't just take a snack anymore if I don't have my creon with me. I will pay the price. Two Saturdays ago, I had broccoli beef, you know, the Chinese dish, and I was in agony from 2 till midnight because broccoli's high fiber, and my digestive system doesn't really like fiber or fat anymore. What's my point? Trials happen. I'm not asking for sympathy, and I know that some of you have been going through more than I have. But the point is, you will meet trials. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. As a Christian, you are not exempt from trials. In fact, you've been promised them. We ask the question, why me, God? Well, when you get blessed, when God does something really cool for you, do you ever say, why me, God? No, we only question God when something bad happens. Some of you may be facing a health trial. Larry, I just told you about him. We had a connection. You know why? Because I had sat with his wife, Stacy, when he was rushed from work to the hospital. And he had what they call a AAA, abdominal aortic aneurysm. That's usually a killer. He's a miracle right there. I had buried a guy in my church in Rockford, Illinois, with that very same thing. He's a walking miracle. But since that time, he's been in and out of the hospital. He's had procedures. And you know one thing I will say about Larry is that he has always had a great attitude. Always good for a joke, have a little fun. His life was turned upside down, was it not? You didn't know it was coming, did you? It just said, hey, AAA, welcome to my life. He's got very thin veins and arteries. So this is something he's facing for his life. I've known others who have financial calamities. Thomas Lockwood this week went into work and they sent him home and laid him off. He wasn't looking for that. Wasn't anticipating it. There are people around the world who are being persecuted for their faith. Some are dying. Families are being torn apart because of their faith. Jesus said in John 16:33, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. You know what? There's nothing we have to fear. Trials are a necessary part of our spiritual growth process. Now again, this is not to be confused with chastisement, which is also necessary. Chastisement is when you've got things in your life that are wrong and God has to correct you. Chastisement is for correction, but a trial is for instruction. It is often a teaching moment, a growing moment, an opportunity to grow your faith. As a parent raising my children, I learned sometimes I had to, as a parent, step back and just let things happen in their life. I'd let them solve their own problems. So you will face trials. The second point, how you face your trial matters. If God is purposeful in allowing a trial in our life, then our reaction is important. If our God is a loving God, which he is, then all things he brings into our life has a purpose. Trials force you to answer that question. Do you really believe that God is purposeful in bringing this here? Can I really trust God? Is the terrible thing I'm going through being allowed by a loving God? How can God do this if he loves me? You see, facing it well is required for growth. It says, for you know. That means if you've been a believer for very long, you learn that you're going to go through difficult times, and you learn that you can turn to the God who will help you through that. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. We're supposed to turn to him and ask for him. But if I don't turn to God, we know, as John, Pastor John says so often, you have not because you ask not. What if I resist God? And you can do that. You can resist him in the trial. Fight him in it. Second thing here about facing these trials, facing it well is part of God's process. It says, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. The let means we can cooperate in this process or we can resist the process. Full effect, I can grow from a trial but not learn the full lesson God has for me. Jacob in the Old Testament is a great example of an Old Testament man who wouldn't learn the whole lesson, and he had to go through it time and time again. Listen to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 6 says, in this you rejoice. Here again, trials and rejoicing. Here, in this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. You see, facing it well reveals our love for God. Look at verse 12 of James 1. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. God will reward you, which God has promised to those who love him. We glorify God when we go through the trial well. One of the things our goal was through all of this was to show God to people. And we tried to have that in our hospital room, having the right attitude. And sometimes we did well, sometimes we didn't. But Dr. Solomon said to my wife, who has three young girls, she said, I hope my family is like your family when they grow up. They saw the support, they saw our faith, they saw our kids' faith. Here it says God will reward us for the crown of life. See, John Piper says this, every pinch of pain has purpose. Nothing in your pain is meaningless. Not if you're a child of God. My third point, enduring a trial will require faith. It says in verse 4, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And then he goes on to say in verse 5, this always confused me, if any of you lacks wisdom. So it said here, for we know, so we have knowledge. And it says that we, if we endure well, we will be full, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And he goes on and he assumes that we all need wisdom. What is wisdom? Wisdom is the ability to take knowledge and apply it into your life and live it out. And what he's saying here is that if you're going through a trial, you need wisdom. You need to take the knowledge that you have about God and about these truths and be able to apply it into your life so it can become real. Remember, I've taught this before, but now it's real because I am going through the trial and I'm having to learn to call to God and say, God, I need your help. God, I can't endure anymore. It is assumed we all need wisdom. We have knowledge, but it's theoretical until you have to live it. We need wisdom to apply that knowledge when we are in the middle of the trial. And God promises to give you that wisdom, but it requires faith. Let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But he says you got to ask in faith. You can't be wavering. You can't be like the waves of the sea, back and forth. You got to believe that God will take care of it. And then he goes on and he talks about the lowly brother and the rich. You see, when you're in the midst of the trial and in pain, it don't matter how much money you have. It don't matter who you are. We're all dependent on God. We need him to help us get through that difficult time. You see, in the trial, there is no difference between the rich and the poor. My fourth point, my last point today, joy comes from knowing God has a plan. That's what we get joy from. It says, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And I don't begin to profess to know all God's purpose in these trials, but I have learned a few things. The first thing is I've learned how important my family and God's family support is, how badly we need prayer and support. When I, thank God, I was released from the hospital and I was able to be at my father-in-law's funeral. And I was able to say, I did an introduction and say a few things. And as I pulled into, I had to drive 2 hours, hour and a half down from my daughter's house, which is where I was staying because it was closer to Johns Hopkins. And we drive that hour and a half, and it's not comfortable driving in a car when you're in pain and difficulty, but I got there, and as I pulled in and saw all the people, of course, I saw my family, my grandkids, my kids, and then I saw Point Harbor people, not just one or two. Now, understand, this is an hour and a half from here. And I saw all these Point Harbor, probably about 30 Point Harbor people there. In fact, if it weren't for them, they probably couldn't. The auditorium they had the service in was also where they had the fellowship afterwards, and they had to convert it over. And Point Harbor people just jumped in and took care of it all. And I pulled in, and I saw all them, and I just began to weep again, crying again. I don't cry. But now it's joy. I was so excited to see all those Point Harbor people that had come an hour and a half. Here's our pastors. They came. And that's my son, John, on the far right. Pastors came and supported me there. Man, I couldn't have made it through all this without you guys. Your prayer, your notes, your gifts, your texts, your phone calls. They made such a difference, such an encouragement in my life. I was talking with Thomas Lockwood this week, asked him permission to share his story. And he said, sure. He said, you know, the thing that's really made the difference is how God's people have stepped up and supported me. Thomas and Emma have always been the type, they supported others when they're going through difficult times, but now they're being supported. And he said, man, what a difference that has made. I've learned no matter how dark things get, God is there and he is at work. You have to look in the small things sometimes. God does big things. I think of when nurse practitioner Peter came in and was telling us about the surgery, and he said, it's almost like a miracle. Normally, bile duct cancer is diagnosed much later because it has no symptoms. But because that tumor blocked the bile duct very early, the symptoms came. He said not only that, the tumor was in the perfect location, right where it met the small intestine. So it wasn't close to the liver, it wasn't close to the pancreas. But more often it's in the little moments, the attitude changes in the nurses and doctors, the divine connections, the timely visits. You see the hand of God. I've learned that when God works through trials, you will be changed. You'll be marked. You'll be scarred even. I have some scars right in this area. life-changing. Like I said, I'm on insulin. I'm on Creon now. I love food and I love to eat. Man, this has put a monkey wrench in that. It's interesting in Genesis chapter 32 and verse 30, it says, so Jacob called the name of this place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. You know the story? Jacob wrestled with God one night and said, God bless me. And God said, no. And he wrestled with God and God pulled his hip out of socket. Now he went away. God blessed him. But he had a limp the rest of his life. Dr. Dan Allender, in Leading with a Limp, said, Jacob's story shows that God intends to wrestle with each one of us in order to both bless us and cause us to walk and lead with a distinctive frailty. What trial are you going through today? Are you embracing the trial? Are you cooperating with God? Are you looking for God? You may be going through a trial so that you can help someone else, as Larry was able to help me. There's others that have gone through similar trials that have reached out to me and helped me. Cheryl and Kevin at Johns Hopkins, we've prayed for them. They've prayed for us. We're still keeping in contact with them. We're going to do something here. There may be somebody, and this wasn't planned, but I'm going to ask for pastors to come forward. If you're on the prayer team, I'm sorry I didn't let you know, but maybe you're just going through a trial right now and you need somebody. Trust me, we don't like to admit when we're going through trials or when we need help, but you need it. You need people from. I'm going to ask the pastors to come forward and anybody in the prayer team, if you can come forward. If you just need to take a few minutes to come to this altar and pray for whatever trial you're going through, let's just bow our heads for a moment. Because I know there are people going through trials right now. Unless you might be like me, when John said, hey, we're going to have you come forward for prayer, I'm like, I don't really want to do that. I don't want to talk to people about what I'm going through. But I realized I need it. If God is working in your heart right now through a trial, just come forward. Have a time of prayer. Ask God for help. Some people out there today, right now, and they may be facing a financial trial, they may be facing a relational trial, they may be facing persecution at their work, they may be also facing a health trial. I pray for them right now, and I ask, Lord, that you would give grace to them. Father, I thank you for what you have done in my life, and I ask, Lord, that you would just, if anybody else is facing a trial, Father, that you would help walk them through this trial, that they would grow and learn from you. And we do pray this in Jesus' precious and holy name.